You think so? Do you honestly think that? Because I think the opposite. I think players are very aware of what people are saying about them, and they have burner accounts, and they know exactly what's going on. Morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Drop in the Gloves. Thanks for joining us here. I'll try to stay far away from the mic for everybody because we got inundated with people. Does John have a cocaine problem? Because he's sniffling like crazy. That's what the people are saying. The answer to that is none of your business. So I'm going to try to stay far away so you don't hear the sniffles, and we're just going to move on. Tim was just roasting me this weekend. Look at all these tweets and messages and this and that. People are getting after Snifflegate, he's calling it.
Was I roasting you or was I sharing what people said? Because there's a difference. And most of the common ones were John's been hanging out with Nichushkin. We got that a few times. One this morning was it sounded like John was trying to suck me in through my headphones. That made me laugh.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, you know, sometimes you just I don't know what happened because I don't have a cold, but it's very funny. So I'm aware of it. I know I have a problem, and I will try to correct. I think I sit too close to the mic because I get all excited and I get closer and closer. So I'm gonna try to keep my distance. For all you people out there. So
I will say, I mean, I don't really remember it. I'll take a little bit of blame for not noticing it to tell you to stop or to try to edit out what I could in the show. But when we record, it doesn't feel like we're doing, like, I feel like I'm just talking to a friend. You know what I mean? Like, aww. So you having the sniffles was no big deal. It just felt very, it feels very normal. So I don't know. I'll try to be more aware of that too.
Yeah. But I guess if like it, when I know when I'm listening to a show, if I can hear bad audio or this and that, it irks me.
Yeah.
So like I've been the Blackhawks have been doing their games and I've been trying, you know, to watch to stay relevant. If they want me to do a game, I'll jump down there. Their audio is bad. For the TV, it's echoey. And so I just you notice it if you're watching. And so I apologize for my sniffles. I'll try to do better. But anyways, Tim. How was your LARPing fair? You went to some Renaissance thing this weekend?
Yeah, I don't remember if I talked about it on the show or if
you
I
did.
Just,
you
I did. Okay. Yeah. I went to the Carolina Renaissance Fair yesterday. It was huge. It was probably, no kidding, 20,000 people. Like, oh, it was massive. I don't know how many acres, but it just went on and on. It was cool. It was cool. We actually watched this documentary called Ren Fair. It's like Tiger King, except it's about Renaissance fairs. Some crazy, weird characters, some like people who are just, they live this stuff. Like who's king and who supports him. And they're like, it's really, really bizarre. But go check it out. It's on HBO if you're into that kind of thing. It's a great little documentary, 3 episodes. But it was fun. The thing was cool. The food was good. And they did this jousting thing at the end where like they have actual, like there's 4 nights and they do a jousting exercises. And it's kind of like WWE, like there's a lot of like scripted drama and they go hand-to-hand combat and they're yelling at the crowds. It was pretty cool. So yeah, it was a good weekend. Didn't your daughters go to one too yesterday?
We were planning on it, but then I realized we don't belong there, so we didn't go. yeah okay. We did not go. Although I don't think we talked about this on the show because I was telling you one of my favorite movies is A Knight's Tale with Heath Ledger. So, yeah, it's a good time. Yeah, there's something about people who go all in on this and just disconnect from reality that's a little concerning. It's like this is good as a hobby, but if you like legit live your life like this, it's like something's wrong upstairs. You know, something's a little off. But no, we did not get to our Renaissance Festival. Unfortunately, we had some other stuff going. It was a beautiful weekend here, Tim. Absolutely gorgeous. So we were kind of hanging around the house. We had some friends over. We just were enjoying fall. As you one would do. And I got an interesting text. I was about to do, it was Sunday, you know, and that's the family day. We kind of hang around the house and who do I see is calling me? George LaRocque. Georges, as I call him. I'm like, I'm not answering this because you know how George gets. He just goes and goes and goes and talks and talks and talks. I'm like, I can't do this right now, George. So I send him to voicemail and I shoot him a text. I'm like, what's going on? And he's like, I'm calling to complain about Ryan Reeves. I'm like, oh, what's going on with this? He's like, did you see the game last night? Rangers Leafs. I'm like, I didn't catch that one. Because I have ESPN Plus, I was going to watch it later that day. And he's like, well, Rempe was asking Reeves for a fight. Three times he asked him, and Revo declined each and every time. And George Laroque and I were just going back and forth, like, what's the purpose of Ryan Reeves if he's not there to fight, stick up for his team, change momentum? Like, that's your job. And George, he's a big Rempe guy because he trained him this offseason, and he said he was going to have, like, he's going to take over the league, right? He was very, passionate about that. So far, Rempe's played two games, hasn't really done much, and he's really killing my bold prediction for the offseason when I said he was going to get 10s across the board. 10 goals, 10 assists, plus fights, 10 plus and 10 plus fights. He hasn't done anything because he's only played two games. So I was hoping this Toronto game was going to, jumpstart his season. Didn't do anything. Rangers won, I think, 5-1. They've been having a very, very strong season. But Revo, going back to the conversation with George, and I was texting with Tim earlier today, it's like, what is the purpose of a fighter, Tim? And I know you, don't take this the wrong way, you couldn't fight your way out of a wet paper bag. You're not a tough person at all. Like, your girlfriend, Julia, probably, steps between you and an altercation just because you're very fragile, which is a beautiful thing.
I take great offense to that, but continue.
Well, because it's true. As a tough guy in the NHL, like, this is your bread and butter. And I think this has even happened to me, Tim. As you get, long in the tooth in the NHL, you get along in your career. And Revo has been in the league now for over a decade. Maybe you don't want to fight anymore. Maybe you just want to go out and play the game. The idea of fighting some 23-year-old kid who's 6'6" and is just raring to go, that doesn't sound fun to me. So maybe Revo is losing his edge because if your team's losing and this guy is challenging you because Rempe wants to fight, he wants to stay in the lineup. The Rangers have a good team, so he's doing everything he can to say, hey, keep me in the lineup. I'm valuable. If you're not fighting when you're down and you're getting challenged, what good are you? Especially on a team like Toronto that does have the depth that can just keep you out of the lineup. So my question is to you, what good is Ryan Reeves if he's not stepping up and fighting when your team's losing?
Yeah, it's a fair question. I have his stats right now. He had 6 points last year. He's minus 13. He had a few fights last year, although low for him, right? And then this year, through four games, no points. He's a -2. He's averaging about 8 points a night, 8 minutes a night. Do you think if when they signed him 2 years ago, they would have signed him if they knew he wasn't going to fight? Because you can get production from the fourth line. I don't mean any disrespect to, because he's an NHL player. He can help a team a little bit, but what he's bringing is the toughness and the grit and the fighting. Even if he's adding a toughness element without fighting, as you did, right? Like you say, the best thing you did was the stuff that didn't happen because you were on the ice, which is fair. But you got to fight sometimes, right? And your team was down 3-1 last night. Why wouldn't you answer the bell in a moment like that? I feel like he almost always would have, unless there's some kind of hand or shoulder injury we don't know about.
Yeah, and this is where me and George were going, where we've been, this is, again, allegedly. I didn't watch the game, so I didn't see him challenge him, but George said he watched it, and he was declining the challenge. Maybe he's hurt. I don't think so. But there's that thing where you don't want to be embarrassed. This is hockey night in Canada. You're playing the New York Rangers. Everybody's watching. Everybody's anticipating this fight. And do you want to get beat up with everybody watching? So there's that thing where if you have that doubt, maybe he's lost his edge, where he's like, I don't want to get beat up. He fought him once last year, and it was kind of a draw, a typical, fight these days. A couple guys throw punches and you go down. But it just, I don't know, it's something to watch, because he's one of the last of a dying breed, but they did have a resurrection because of Matt Rempe, where it's like, okay, last year, team started to bulk up in the East. You saw, Curtis McDermott came East. You saw Matthew Olivier. You saw Ottawa. They got that Catalic, and they got somebody else. So teams are bulking up in the East, but if you're not going to fight, you're just going to go away. Like, you have to do something to merit your spot in the lineup. So it was a little concerning, but good for Matt Rempe, good for the New York Rangers. Concerning for the Toronto Maple Leafs, Craig Berube's already, you know, ripping these guys, you know, dressing them down during the game when they're winning, not playing the right way, really stopping practice to rip some young players and some star players. So it's nice to see him doing that, but it's not a good sign this early in the season when you're already having these issues of hard work, playing the right way, doing the things you need to do to win when it's 5 games into the season. Like, those are things that should happen midway through the season when you're in the draw. Like, it, you've played 20 games and you got 60 more to go and it's just a long season. 5 games in, that's maybe concerning.
So just back to Reeves, does your gut tell you that this is kind of the beginning of the end for him? Yeah. Or is it just a blip on the radar and he'll remind us later this season that he's still the top dog until he decides he's not?
Yeah, it's the former. I think this is an issue where, yeah, there's some tough guys. And I feel like this could be the beginning of the end. He's older. He makes a good amount of money. Why would you want to go out and get your face punched in every single night? That's the thing with fighting Rempe. You're gonna eat some. You know what I mean? It's not like Revo when he's fighting somebody else and he has the length advantage and he has the energy advantage. Rempe knows he can take a punch and he knows he can deliver a punch. So you know you're in for a fight when you fight this guy. So yeah, maybe. And then he'll go and do something and go on a tear and fight 3-4 guys and beat them up and he'll prove us all wrong. But it's not a good look. When I'm getting text message from George LaRocque saying, what's wrong with this guy? And I'm a Revo guy. He's been on the show, 2-3 times? I'm a fan of him. But when you're in Toronto, the lights are the brightest and you're on the big stage, you have to show up. This is why you were brought in here. You said you're going to change the culture. You're going to come in. No one's going to mess with my team. It's like, well, they're messing with you and your team's struggling and you're not working hard. So it's time to, you know, buck up, you know, put up or shut up. He does a lot of talking, and it's tough for me to say this, but you have to show up if you're going to, you know, be that big mouthpiece and say you're the toughest guy. Time to prove it, man, because there's some guys who want to go, and you got to go sometimes.
Fair enough. Yeah. Anyways, we'll see.
Yeah, we will see. And I know he's going to text me, and he's like, what are you doing, jerk, calling me out? But That's the price you pay for being honest. And I'm trying to be honest here, but he has to do something. You can't just start the season again minus 10 like you did last year and all of a sudden just say, oh, I was dealing with this and that. It's like, this is year 2 now in Toronto. You have to do something. You have to make an impact on this team. He's not as quick as he used to be. You can see on the forecheck and this and that. He's not burying guys like he used to. You got to do something, my man. So anyways, a team that is doing something, Tim. Tell me all about these Ottawa Senators.
Yeah, I think of this fun little segment called Buy or Sell, basically looking at some of the trends in the league and not some of that overreaction stuff we did last week, but more just like, okay, we've seen a few teams, we've seen a few players. Are we buying what's happening or are we selling and saying this can't continue? So the first one is Ottawa, which is a team we haven't really talked about at all this season so far. The question is, do you buy them being a winning team? And that can mean as simple as winning more games than they lose, even if they're one game over 500 when the season ends. They're 3-2 right now. Last year, they were 37-41-4. So a small chunk under 500, not a ton. Surprisingly, Omar has only started 2 out of the 5 games they played. I don't know where that came from. Anton Forsberg has started 3, and he got pulled in one of them. But Omar's been excellent. He's 1-1, you know, okay team, but he's a .914 save percentage, .258 goals against. You got a 3-way tie with 7 points between Stutzla, Kachuk, and Sanderson, the defenseman, for leading the team. And you look at their games, they've beaten 3 really good teams. They beat Florida on their opening night. They beat the LA Kings, and they beat Tampa. And they lost to a couple stinkers, surprisingly. I think Montreal, I forget who the 5th one was. But do you see this as a case of a goalie can really change everything? And do you buy this start of them being above 500 as a team?
The answer is yes to both those questions. I feel like as a player, especially a defenseman, when you have a goalie that's subpar, like Korpisalo was, like the Ottawa Senators goaltenders have been in the last few years, it changes the way you play the game. You play on your heels. You're always, you know, the first one back. If you're a forward forechecking, maybe you're leaning to the side of defense. You're not being too aggressive if you're a defenseman. You're not pinching in as often as you probably should, because if it gets by you, you know it's going to be in the back of your net. You're always thinking, okay, I got to protect. You're not being as aggressive. Now you got Linus Omark. It's like, okay, like he's going to bail me out. He's there. So it gives you that vote of confidence to be a little more aggressive, get on your toes, get on the forecheck. You can cheat a little more. So yeah, it's a huge mental advantage to have a goaltender that you know is going to make that save when you need it. Whereas last year, oof, anytime there was a 2-on-1, a 3-on-2, a 2-on-2, it was in the back of your net. So these guys, you can tell they're playing with confidence. And it's huge, especially when you have the horses that they have up front. If you let them go and not having to worry about back checking or coming back, you know, you got to get that trailer. It's like Stützle and Tkachuk and Giroux and Norris and Batherson. Like, these are high-end forwards, Tim. So it's fun to watch. And then, yeah, they'll be over 500. I don't think they'll be a playoff team, but I think they'll be over 500. I think they're a good team. I think they still lack a little bit on the back end. I like Jake Sanderson. Obviously, Brady Tkachuk came on and said, this guy's got what it takes. And then, like, the next week, he signs a huge contract. Thomas Chabot, I think he's really good. You know, Nick Jensen, he's okay. Travis Hamonic, he's been around. But I don't think they're super deep on the back end. I think that's an issue for them. But I like their team. I think they'll be above 500 for sure.
Yeah, I just pulled this up last year. Last year's standings, there were six teams above 500 who missed out on the playoffs. So it feels like they're probably right around that range, maybe. And maybe they get lucky and squeeze it out. And if they do get into the postseason, I mean, I know this is not even through October yet, but this could be a fun team to watch. I mean, Allmark, we know, is a great goaltender, and we've been begging for Brady Tkachuk to be in the playoffs since he's been in the league. He's built for it. So, yeah, I'll buy that as well. I think they're above 500, and I hope they're a bit closer to a wild card spot than you think.
Well, what do you think is missing for this team? Because we know what I think. I think they need one or two more defensemen to fill out that, you know, the bottom six. Is that the only thing they're missing, or do you think there's another issue on this team?
I mean, I look at the defensemen as well. Jake Sanderson was great his rookie year. I think he took a little bit of a step back last year. You were hoping Chabot was going to be that number one, like, all situations type defenseman, and he's kind of morphed into a Slavin type. Maybe not as good, but the defense first, reliable, doesn't make a lot of mistakes, but isn't going to put up many points. So you're hoping that Sanderson can be that guy. So if he is, and he continues what he's doing, then I think maybe that answers that question. So I think it's probably just about depth. You've got the horses. You've got a couple of great defensemen. Like, can you have a third and fourth line that can score a couple of goals a series in the playoffs? You have a four defenseman that you can roll in all situations and not worry about it. And maybe they do. And Zub is obviously pretty good. So yeah, we'll see. I don't see any glaring holes. It's more just, can they live up to the potential that we've known they've had for a few years now?
Forgot about Artem Zub. Yeah, he's out right now. No, he'll help immensely. And then Chychrun, they didn't really retain him. But yeah, Ottawa's having a good start. It's fun. I'm buying all of these, yes.
All right, next one. The Washington Capitals, another team that's off to a great start. They're 3-1. Same question. Do you buy them being a winning team? Tom Wilson has 5 goals in 4 games. He is doing really well. And they've beaten 3 great teams, Vegas, Dallas, New Jersey. A very similar story here. The thing that's really different to me that strikes out is that they've scored 16, they've let in 14, and their goalies have not been very good. Both below 900, both of threes or fours in the goals against. That's both Logan Thompson and Charlie Lindgren. But their offense is fourth, or tied for third in the league with 4 goals per games played. So their offense has been great. Are you buying or selling this start?
I'm buying it for the reason that you just mentioned. Their defense will get better. I don't know why they're not succeeding. They have some really good defensemen. You bring in Matt Roy, Michigan Tech alum, who's as solid as they come. He was fantastic in LA. You got Chychrun, you got Carlson, you got Sandin, who they got from a steal from the Toronto Maple Leafs. I like their defense. And you got a Trevor Van Riemsdyk, and that's a good top five. So they will figure it out. And I'm a big Logan Thompson fan. I really am. I think he got a raw deal with the Vegas Golden Knights, much like every goaltender does in Vegas for some reason. He got ran out of town when Aiden Hill took a starting job, and they didn't really give him another look. And then Charlie Lindgren played fantastic last year. He's obviously come down to earth. He could maintain that spot, but he's a good backup. I think they'll be okay. I am buying this start, as crazy as it is. I don't think Wilson's going to score as much as he does. I think their offense will come down to earth a little bit, but they'll settle in defensively. I think they got a good team. They got a good, solid core six. And they bring in Pierre-Luc Dubois. For as much hate as he gets, he is a solid NHL player. You know, like, he makes too much money, but he's a good second-line center. So I don't hate this team. I think they'll be right there at the end for a playoff spot. There'll be a wild card contention. So yeah, and Ovechkin will get his 12 goals and everything will be right in the world.
Yeah, I was trying to disagree with you, but I don't really see it. Because you could say, okay, if Tom Wilson doesn't score an uncharacteristic 5 goals in 4 games, they could be below 500 or at it. So maybe it's misleading. And they have a relatively easy schedule coming up. They have Philly twice this week. They have Tampa on Saturday, and then they have the Rangers in Montreal. So they could finish the month like 6-3 or 7-2 even. So yes, it's not crazy to say that. So yeah, I'll buy this for now, and maybe they'll prove me wrong.
And this is a team last year where we were just shaking our heads after every week, after every month. Like, how the hell is this team doing this? Like, they look terrible on the ice. If you watch the game, the eye test is atrocious for this team. They get outplayed. They get out-hustled. All of a sudden, they win the game 3-2. It's just, it did not make sense how they won games, and it's happening again. We're just like, wait a minute, you're 3-1? Yeah. Tom Wilson's got 5 goals? How does this happen? So, and their strength of their team, which we thought coming in this season was the back end and the goaltending, has been the reason why they've been struggling. So that'll figure itself out. The goaltending, I think, will get better, and the goals will come because you have good, like, you brought in some high-end talent in Mangiapane, Pierre-Luc Dubois. You still have Wilson. Ovechkin, as much as I give him a hard time, he's still a pretty good goal scorer. Dylan Strome, like, this team will score goals. So I don't see an issue there. Much like the Ottawa Senators, like, you have good forwards. You could use a couple more D-men. You're a solid team. And when you look at this division, there are beatable teams. Like, you're going to beat the Canadiens. You're going to beat the Sabres. You're going to beat the Red Wings. Like, there are beatable teams. So Flyers, Blue Jackets, Penguins, you know, you're in the top half of this division, the conference, just division and conference, just based on the East is kind of getting weak a little bit when you look at it from the top to bottom. So yeah, I think they'll make the, as crazy as it sounds, I think they're going to be a wild card team this year again, and they'll get waxed in the playoffs, but yeah, they'll be there. I buy it.
Yeah. And you never know. Both Charlie Lindgren and Logan Thompson have stolen games before, so maybe they get super hot. But I know I do feel kind of silly talking about the playoffs already, but who knows?
I know. But we have to.
You said the East is getting a little bit weaker. Do you think there's any correlation between the East adding all the toughness and maybe becoming more slow? Or is that just...
Oh, yeah. No, that cause and effect. Yeah, I think, well, tough guys aren't fast. So when you look at the East, it's a little more slow. It's a little more plodding. And then the West is becoming faster and goal scoring and this and that. Whereas when I played, it was the West was that way. The East was quick. And there was a reason wherever I went, like, that's where the toughness went. I just follow the trends, and it just how it goes. Like, I knew if we were going out East, I wasn't going to play. Like, oh, I'm not playing Detroit. I'm not playing Florida. I'm not playing these teams. And then we go west. So I'm playing against Anaheim. I'm playing against San Jose and LA because that's where the toughness was. So it is what it is.
What's up, guys? Tim here. Listen, if you've been listening to the show for a while, then you know that I have an adopted rescue dog named Levi. He was around 6 when I got him. He's 8 now. And he's the sweetest and most loving companion you could ever hope to know. Dog owners know what I'm talking about. You want the best for your pets to help them live as happily and healthily as possible. That's why we partnered with The Farmer's Dog. The Farmer's Dog makes feeding real healthy dog food easy and convenient, and your dog will absolutely love it. Levi is obsessed, and he's been licking his bowl clean every day. The Farmer's Dog makes and delivers fresh, healthy dog food right to your door. It's developed by vets, nutritionally balanced, and made from real meat and veggies to the same safety standards of human food. A healthy diet isn't just important for people. It has all kinds of benefits for dogs, too. From healthier coat and skin, to better breath, even easier digestion. Levi's energy has been so much better since making the switch, and he looks forward to mealtime in a way that he never has before. The package came in and everything was personalized with Levi's name. I mean it when I say these guys love pets the same way that you do. And now you can join the movement and get 50% off your first box of fresh, healthy food at thefarmersdog.com/gloves. Plus, you get free shipping. Just go to thefarmersdog.com/gloves to get 50% off. That's thefarmersdog.com/gloves.
All right. What else, Tim?
Yeah. The next one here, Zach Hyman. Oilers fans know where I'm going with this. He has 0 points in 6 games. 0. No goals, no assists. And what's crazy, and I actually looked on this, I figured maybe he dropped down the lineup, whatever. And you can, this Money Puck, I think it is, the website, you can look at, like, the minutes played on different lines. He has played 48 minutes, which is the most of any line combo in Edmonton on 5-on-5 with McDavid and Draisaitl. He's getting the ice time. He's getting the touches. And even though the Oilers have had a slow start with their 2-4, they're minus 12 on the season, McDavid's still getting his points. He's got 6. Draisaitl's got 3 goals, 5 points. Even Jeff Skinner has 4 points. So it's not like the entire offense is struggling. So really, really uncharacteristic. I think we all sort of expected some kind of drop off for Hyman, having a career high 54 goals last year. I think before that it was 36. So major jump, but we didn't think it would be this bad. So are you buying or selling this start?
I'm selling. I think you could put anybody with those two guys and he would have to put up points. The question is, will he last there? How long is Chris Knobloch going to keep putting someone with Draisaitl and McDavid and them not producing anything? And Hyman does bring other tangibles that help in the game. He gets in on the forecheck. He's always responsible defensively. He gets in front of the net. He goes to the hard areas where you don't want McDavid or Draisaitl to go to. So he does add a lot of different things. Whereas if you were to put a Nuge on that line, like the Nuge isn't going to do the hard stuff, or Jeff Skinner or these types of players. So he does add a lot, but 0 points to him. That's a tough pill to swallow, especially like you said, he's coming off of 54 goals last year, 36 the year before. You have to produce with these guys. And he's always thought, oh, this is the bargain contract of the century. He only makes, what, $5 million a year? I think that's where we have to look at Zach Hyman. Last year was an aberration. Aberration? I don't know how to say that word. Where it's like, okay, that he's not going to duplicate that. That was a special year. So he's more of a 25-30 goal guy. So he will get those goals, and I think it'll happen. But I think the bigger question is, how long can we keep putting him on this line where we have to demote him and bump up Arvidsson, bump up a Connor Brown, get Corey Perry on the first line maybe, and just see how to balance out this attack. But it's not good enough. 0 points. So I am selling that he'll bounce out of this. Like, he will bounce out of this. I'm buying the fact that he won't duplicate last year. So I think he lands at 30 goals. So I'm kind of hedging my bet a little bit.
I think the other thing too is Zach Hyman isn't a guy that really creates his own offense either. Yeah. Like, you look at all his goal chart last year, and 30 plus of them were like basically in the crease, right? Yeah. And so in order to get those goals, you really need to have offensive zone time. You have to get pucks on net. McDavid and Draisaitl can score in the rush. They can just create something out of nothing, and they're going to get their points regardless of how the team's doing. But I think Hyman needs to be on a productive team that's creating offense, sustained offensive pressure, that sort of thing, to get his tucks. And that'll come, like you said, but it's not going to be 50 goals. It's not going to be probably 40 goals, but he'll bounce back. So I'm selling that slow start. He's not going to have 0 goals and 0 points as we go.
But I think there is a real possibility that he gets demoted and he ends up with 20 goals. You know, yep. He gets a goal every 3-4 games. So that could possibly happen. That's a huge hit for the Edmonton Oilers. If you don't have him, then all of a sudden you lose the guy riding shotgun with these guys. And who's next? Because you don't have Kane. He's gone. You bring in Arvidsson. He's doing okay. Skinner, is it him? Are you going to give him a shot up there? So you have to start rotating these guys. And your once deep team, if Zach Hyman is not producing, it's like, ugh. And I'm not saying it's going to happen, because he's got a proven track record, Hyman, where he will bounce back, and he's a good, hardworking player. So, but he's got to start putting the points on the board.
Yeah, and he does those other things too, like you mentioned. Like, he's probably, you know, forcing a turnover that turns into a goal. He's not not showing up on the stat sheet, you know, stuff like that. So he'll be fine.
Yeah.
The last one I want to do here is the Colorado Avalanche are now 2-0 after starting the season 0-4. Starting a little bit of a comeback, question mark. They've beaten two bad teams, though. One was the Sharks last night, who is still winless, 0-4-2, I think. And the Ducks, they beat them earlier in the weekend. But their big three is crushing it. Cale Makar leads the league with 12 points. McKinnon's got 11. Rantanen's got 11. All of these in 6 games. So they're basically putting up 2 points a game. Goaltending, still not great. Are you buying their 2-0 little run here? Or do you think they're still a bad team?
No, I think they're still a bad team. Yeah. And we've said this all along, or I have. You love the Avalanche. You like drinking the Kool-Aid. I think they're a super top-heavy team. They have a lot of injuries. Obviously, Landeskog out. Lykkanen's out. You got Duran, who's been out. You got Devin Taves, who's been out. And then everybody doesn't know what's happening with Valerie Nichushkin. So they're doing what they need to do, the top guys, in order to even squeak by the bad teams. You know, so yeah, you win Anaheim, you beat the San Jose Sharks. That's good. it takes the top guys showing up and play, balling out, scoring like crazy amounts of points because the depth is not there. So yeah, I'm 100% buying that this team will not make the playoffs. And I'm sorry. That's just how I feel right now. When your third and fourth line are garbage, absolute garbage. And I'm comparing this to their Stanley Cup team and their team that was like a juggernaut. Compared to those teams, this team sucks, right? And so if fans are getting excited about them beating the Sharks, who will probably get the first overall pick, and the Anaheim Ducks, who they're not good, like, let's just pump the brakes here. And again, we're six games into the season, but this team will struggle, and they have struggled. So unless Landeskog all of a sudden gets healthy and Ishushkin comes back and everything is right in the world, which won't happen, this team's going to struggle, you guys, and they need they need superhuman efforts from McKinnon and Makar and Rantanen and their top guys in order to even beat the lowly teams. They can have superhuman efforts and they will not beat the good teams at all. So it's a good story. It's a good last couple of games, but it could be a case, Tim, of Makar getting 100 plus points, this team being a basement dweller. He wins the Norris. McKinnon is up for the MVP with 140 points, and this team just is a train wreck. So I could totally see that happening.
It's possible. I would just mention one more player is having a great start for them. It's Ross Colton.
Yeah.
He's got 6 goals on the year. He leads the team in goals. Only 1 assist, and he's been kind of a fantasy beast. He's ranked really high if you're doing fantasy and you count hits and blocks and all that stuff. He's doing everything well.
He's playing with McKinnon and Rantanen. So again, like, it's just like Hyman. He gets the benefit of playing with these two studs. Just go to the net and put your stick on the ice. You will get goals. That's why the Hyman thing is very, very shocking. But Ross Colton, imagine that. You go to the rink every day. You play with McKinnon and Rantanen. How fun is that? I just go in and, you know, dig the puck out of the corner and watch these guys do their thing. It's like, yes, please. Yes, please. I'll can I have another? So yeah, he will get 50 goals this year if he keeps at it. So, but yeah, this team stinks still.
All right, we'll get some quick hits here. The Jets remain undefeated. They're the only remaining undefeated team. They beat Pittsburgh 6-3 last night in Winnipeg. Shout out to our listener, Joe Anderson. He was at the game. He sent me a message this morning. The building was rocking. It was also the Brian Little retirement night, but the fans were all shouting, "Where's Rutger? Where's Rutger?" So obviously, McGrody was drafted by the Winnipeg Jets, did not want to play for them, got it traded to Pittsburgh. And then Pittsburgh recently sent Rutger down to the AHL. So they're really rubbing it in for him, which I think is their right. Absolutely.
So the Pierre-Luc Dubois trade is looking really solid for the Winnipeg Jets. Gabe Vilardi is playing fantastic on that first line with Kyle Connor and Mark Scheifele. They're playing lights out, like absolutely such good hockey. And then Iafallo kind of bounces up and down the lineup, and he's been great for them too. And then you just get away from Pierre-Luc Dubois. So this Jets team, They're going to be great in this regular season. And they're going to lose in the first round, maybe the second round. But yeah, they're a good team. They're a very, very good team. I don't want to put the cart before the horse here, but they're playing great hockey. You know, Morrissey, they have every ingredient you would like for a really, really good team that you would think would go deep in the playoffs. But that's good for them to get on Rutger and McGrody. So if and this is where it boggles my mind. I'm sorry. I just bumped my desk. People are going to go crazy. Stop touching things. You're making too much noise. What are you thinking right now if you're Rutger McGrody? So you force yourself out of Winnipeg. You think, I deserve playing time. I need to be in the NHL. I'm that good. So you get the avenues you need to get to. You get your agent to start getting on the phone. You start creating bad press. You get your trade that you want, and you go to Pittsburgh. This is it, a new start. I'm going to get a chance. You get sent down to Wilkes-Barre Scranton. What is going through your head right now? Like, mentally, this kid has to be fried. I remember I was in, where was I? Houston. And the whole Jonathan Duran saga was going on. He wanted to be up. Everybody thought he was the next big thing. He was in Tampa Bay. He was having issues with the coaches. It was a problem. He gets sent down to Syracuse. You could tell he was mentally fried, and we played him and we were all over him, like just top to bottom, just ripping him apart. And Syracuse had a tough team, and I fought like 2 or 3 times that night. The whole time I'm just giving it to him. So was our whole team. You don't think this Rutger McGrody is just getting torn apart everywhere he goes. That's mentally hard for anybody, let alone a 19-year-old kid. I don't know how old he's, 20. It's just, you're a sensitive cat, Tim. How would you take this if you knew, like, okay, it was all over the press. I want to trade. I'm going to succeed. Give me a chance. Go to Pittsburgh. You just, I don't want to say stink. You don't come up big. You don't make the team. You get sent down to Wilkes-Barre. What does that do to your mental game?
I was picturing, like, what his DMs must look like after last night. Because if you Google his name, I was trying to find when exactly the trade went through. I Googled his name this morning. There's nothing about the player. Everything's about the Jets fans taunting his name last night. So, yeah, it's got to be tough. Like, I wonder how do you turn your socials off? Most players are pretty good at not Googling themselves and that sort of thing, but it's got to be tough.
You think so? Do you honestly think that? Because I think the opposite. I think players are very aware of what people are saying about them, and they have burner accounts, and they know exactly what's going on.
Maybe, but I just hope that he turns this into like a chip on his shoulder and let me prove you wrong type thing and not let it get in your head. And this is like, he spirals because of this, you know?
I wish I could say that I think that would happen. I don't think it will. I think these days kids don't have that mental fortitude to push through this. He obviously felt he was, you know, he needed to be given something. He was upset that he wasn't making the Winnipeg Jets. So he's like, I deserve this. And so he gets traded from this team. So if he couldn't push through that adversity, that hurdle to make the Winnipeg Jets, where Kevin Cheveldayoff is like, no, you're not there yet. He didn't like that. And so he thought he was going to be given something at Pittsburgh. He didn't make that team. Do you think he's going to pull himself up from the bootstraps all of a sudden and say, okay, now I'm going to work hard? It's like, it doesn't seem like that's his MO. So in my opinion, like, this is going to crush him and we won't see him again in the NHL. Like, this is just, and that seems to be the trend for these young kids who have a lot of talent. They think they should be given something. They don't want to work for it. And then they just go away because they don't have that. Like, I'm not going to take this. I'm going to work hard. They go, I'm not going to take this. I'm going to complain about it. And if I'm not given it, then they just go away. So it's too bad, but I really, he could be one of those guys. You have a ton of potential, ton of talent. You just can't put it all together because you can't just get skill without a work ethic. And that's what Sidney Crosby, I saw something the other day, and I know this firsthand, where it's like people always just lauded him for his amazing God-given talent, this and that. Like, oh, he's so talented, so talented. He worked his bag off, that guy. Like, he worked so hard. So you can't just make it with pure talent. You have to have an amazing work ethic to get to the NHL, let alone be the top guy in the league for years and years and years. So, like, I know Connor Bedard worked his tail off. Like, he works at his craft. All these young kids who come up, they think it's just easy. It's like, oh, it's going to happen. I go from college. I'm not playing the AHL. Like, put me in the game. I'm going to be great. No. That's not how it works. You have to work really, really hard to be in the NHL, let alone be a top line guy. So I think this McGrory is taking a little, he's got to look himself in the mirror. Who am I? Who do I want to be? But anyways, moving on. Tyler Myers, friend of the show. Go ahead.
Well, I just looked up Cutter Gauthier, the other guy. I always linked the two together, and he has 0 points in 5 games for Anaheim. Has a 0 plus minus. Who knows if he's even been out for a goal for or against. He is playing 15 minutes tonight, though.
Good for him.
Tyler Myers, he's joined the 1,000-game play club over the weekend. Pretty cool. He had a beautiful little assist to Brock Besser between the legs. I forget who that was against, but cool little play for him. Good moment for friend of the show. The last one here, the Nashville Predators are 0-5. In the expansion era, only 17 teams have started with at least 5 consecutive regulation losses. 6 out of those 17 have made the playoffs, but none in the last 20 years, 30 years, since 95-96. Brutal start, and they're playing Boston at home on tomorrow night and Tuesday. And on Wednesday, we'll be interviewing friend of the show, Alex Daugherty from the Tennessean, to talk about this devastatingly slow start for a team we all had high hopes for. So we'll see what he has to say about it.
It's not just that they're losing. Like, they're getting smoked. You know what I mean? It's not like, oh, we lost in overtime. No. Like, you lost 5-2 to Detroit. You lost 7-3 to Seattle. Like, you're getting beat by big sums to teams that, meh. aren't going to be there at the end of the season. So this, could this go down, Tim, as another case of just a GM nailing it in the offseason? And then the players just sucking in the regular season. This is reminiscent of Calgary when they went out and got Kadri. You get Huberdeau. You kind of revamp your team on the fly. You think it's going to be fantastic. You're not going to miss a beat. And you just lay an egg on the ice. This is worse than that.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm excited to get Alex's take on this because he was all, Nashville, get the parade route ready. This is going to be fantastic. Zero wins, potentially six losses. That's embarrassing. Do you think they beat Boston?
No. Nope.
So looking at their upcoming schedule, they get Boston tomorrow. Then they get Chicago. Is that their first win, Chicago?
Maybe. Maybe.
I hope Columbus? Not. Columbus the next night, they got back-to-back, and then they get Tampa Bay. So they really got to make hay versus Chicago and Chicago and Columbus, because you ain't beating Tampa Bay. You're not beating Edmonton after that. Colorado could be a win, but like, oh man, this team, what a waste. What a fun story it was, though, in the offseason. It was fun to talk.
Yeah, maybe they'll prove us wrong.
Hopefully. And we got something. But yeah, it'll be nice to have Alex on Wednesday, and we'll talk to everybody then. Anything else, Tim?
That's it. We'll see you Wednesday.
All right, everybody. Have a good week. We'll talk to you later. Cheers.